Now, when it comes to different motivations, a lot of the international trade is market oriented. For example, you have Apple. Now, Apple is a US company, started operations there. But then when your US market saturates as in how many more new consumers will you find there, then they look for newer markets. So they first went to Japan. Now they have, you know, not only in terms of sale of products, but production, sale, etc. They are operating, you know, they have production facilities in almost 43 countries. Even in India, you have in the southern part of the world, you have a large production facility for, you know, the Apple iPhones now. Then you have your cost-oriented motivations where clearly, when we were talking about the German example, the German case, then there was a cost impact, cheaper labor, which made them think of moving their production from China to India for their footwear. So you could have reasons for newer markets, reasons for lesser cost, which drive international trade. You could have various other factors like certain, you know, SOPs being provided or incentives being provided. In India, we have the, you know, PLI scheme. We have so many other, you know, export promotion councils. So you could have international trade, which is being driven because of certain positive facilities or SOPs being provided by World Bank, IMF, etc., or your organizations within your own country. Then you also have free trade agreements. You have, you know, trading blocks like the NAFTA, which is North American Free Trade Agreement, which is primarily for trade between, you know, North America, Canada, which heavily impacts the trade in that region. So a lot of the employment, a lot of the lifestyle of people is dependent on trade, which is happening because of the NAFTA. So a lot of the trade could be, international trade could be driven by political aspects, promotions, by facilitation-oriented reasons as well, in addition to simply market orientation and cost orientation. Now, of course, when it comes to, you know, IT, then when you think about technology, then India's participation in global international trade is huge because we have used all the facilities to become a digitally empowered economy and provide that service to the world. And also globally, that could be the reason for a lot of the countries dealing with us, and also across international borders. That is a huge aspect of why people choose to conduct their trade where they do. There could be reasons of, you know, competition, which could, you know, drive international trade as well. So you have, in a nutshell, over and above just bottom line, you have so many other aspects which are driving international business and international trade. You know, for example, I was giving you your examples of the India promoting Indian government promoting international trade with newer markets that we hadn't tapped into in the past. Now, when we are talking about the positive elements of international trade, we should also keep in mind that there are challenges which come into play. So while companies may be driven by higher profits, higher margins, you know, newer markets, cost orientation, etc., they should also keep in mind that it's not simply a matter of getting access to a new market and benefiting from that. For example, when you think about Financial Times, now it is owned by you know, Japanese Nikkei, but the paper, the research and news service, would have thought that it would be a huge hit in India, with India having such a large English speaking population, and with people interested in investments, with people wanting to have research. But when they actually came to India, They had a lot of issues with, local journalism, etc. And there were a lot of legal cases that they got caught up in. So while a new market, higher profits, etc. are attractive, also one has to keep in mind that there are reasons and motivations that go way beyond that: regulation, local cultures, various other dynamics which have to be kept in mind. So one has to have partnerships, one has to have knowledge of the local regions that one is accessing. Otherwise, one will fail. You know, later on, we will even talk about the Kingfisher case, where Kingfisher's airline's international expansion into international routes, when it came to the airlines, how badly they affected their business and eventually led to the company shutting down. So, over and above cost, bottom line, markets, there are a lot of other factors which have to be taken into account. So international business has different consequences for different parties. For example, when it comes to HEB, which is a North American supplier of food products, etc. Now, they did something very interesting, that they wanted to keep supplying blueberries throughout the year to their American consumers. Now, blueberries are only grown in warmer climates and a seasonal product when it comes to the US. But then HEB identified Mexico as a country and a sourcing platform where in the warmer climates they could get blueberries and keep supplying to their North American customers even in off season. Now, an interesting aspect like this has provided them a new source of their supply, where even if they are having to spend some money, extra money to get this, the fact that the consumer is getting supply throughout the year, not just during seasonal times, then they would be able to absorb the cost as well. So you have very interesting aspects which come into effect when it comes to competition, sourcing, efficiency. And over a period of time, what HEB saw was that the warmer climates in Mexico and the supply chain that they managed to set up helped them to source at a efficient, reasonable cost, so that the cost being passed on to the customers wasn't that exorbitant either. So there are so many elements which come in and help. Now, when it comes to Coca-Cola, they have 900 bottling plants all over the world. Now, obviously, those are driven by efficiency, cost, economies of scale, etc. So there are a lot of consequences when we talk about the reach in terms of the market dynamics. Think of a McDonald's. A McDonald's has almost 42,000 restaurants, across the world. So there are a lot of positive consequences of international business. When we are talking about all these various elements, we are talking about the efficiency, whether it is HEB, when I spoke about McDonald's, Coca-Cola, the efficiency and, supply chain, they are being able to get a benefit of in these different countries, the local employment that it would be creating, the use of IT, etc. So it is a complete cross-border world. Now, you also have negative aspects of international trade, which I have mentioned, as in the case of Russia. For example, when the war started, the companies which exited, among the BPs and the Heinekens, etc., even BMW completely halted their production in Russia. So you have the positive consequences, but you also have negative consequences of international dynamics. So continuing with some of the side effects, now war, what is happening in the Red Sea when it comes to the international channels. Sometimes we have cases, for example, we've had PILs filed in India also, where it has been alleged that certain bottling plants of international companies have led to pollution, have led to a lot of water usage in those local in those regions where that water is actually required by the local population, but is actually going towards the plants, and then pollution being fueled into the local rivers and water channels. So while you have a lot of positive aspects, you also have side effects, which we will be talking about in terms of pollution, in terms of jobs when technology comes in. Now, talking about fraud, we all were impacted in some way or the other, directly or indirectly, by the CrowdStrike, which happened. You know, there was a system update in Microsoft, and because of that new Windows, some glitch happened, and the entire travel industry globally got impacted. This is just about a month, 30, 40 days old case. And out of 110,000 commercials, scheduled commercial flights globally, on that Friday when this CrowdStrike cyber issue happened, almost 35,000 flights were delayed and 5,000 flights were completely cancelled. We all constantly saw in the news over the next few days how badly travelers, couriers, anything which had to do with logistics, transport, travel got impacted. Like, people were actually issued paper boarding passes, which is such a strange thing. So you would not think that in this day and age, technology could have a negative impact, but it did. So these are the things we have to keep in mind when we're talking about the positive side. We have to also keep in mind that there is there are side effects which have to be taken into account when we talk about carbon footprint and the targets in the Kyoto Agreement, which different countries have to adhere to, the world has to adhere to. We are nowhere close to those, because obviously with industrialization, with trade, there will be carbon footprint as well. So situations can be both positive and negative when it comes to international trade. Political tensions, as we've been talking now, when you talk about the Middle East and the tensions there, that is going to add to the tensions already there because of what is happening in Russia, because of Ukraine, which was one of the very large contributors to global trade when it came to food grains. It was considered literally the bread basket for large parts of the world. Then those things are going to be negatively impacting not just the trade in those countries, but global trade. Later on, when we're going to be talking about, I'm going to be talking about the case of Cuba and how Cuba was a massive sugar supplier to the whole world, but their sugar industry is in the dumps because of domestic and international factors, and how that is impacting the region and the world. Unfavorable aspects are an unnecessary evil of global trade. We cannot wish it away. When it comes to, if we see how post-liberalization, or if we see how the economy has grown, of course there have been income inequalities. There are a lot of countries where rich get richer, poor get poorer. There is no middle class. Of course, those elements happen. When it comes to protectionism, especially when you think about countries like North Korea, they are completely cut off. People there don't even know what's going on in the whole world. Even when we talk about, let's say, something simple like import duty, export duty. You think about onions, something as daily as onions. Now, we imposed, as a country, India imposed tariffs, very high duty on onions, which has recently in the last few days been reduced. But because the customs systems have still not been updated at the ports, there are some almost 400 containers lying at JNPT, where because of this duty being changed, which has not been updated in the system, they cannot go ahead and export those. So when it comes to protection based mechanisms, policies, etc., they can create these issues which will will not immediately seamlessly come into play, which can create issues and problems. There are various ways of doing international business, licensing, franchising, foreign direct investment, joint ventures, subsidiaries, etc. We'll be getting into FDIs in a lot more detail in another chapter. Briefly talking about licensing and franchising, they are two different models, and let me touch on some of them. So when it comes to licensing, we are aware of Coke. Now, when it comes to licensing, a company like Coke allows parties across the world or domestically to use their brand or their logo. So in a way, they are allowing another party to benefit from their brand reputation, and they get royalty for it. They get a monetary benefit for it. So in licensing, you are not giving the entire model of your business. You are allowing someone else to use your brand. So in a lot of merchandising cases, for example, Starbucks is selling a lot of Nestle products. That is a merchandising arrangement where it is licensing which is being taken into account. When it comes to franchising, then we have a group like Marriott Group of Hotels. Now, when it comes to franchising, then you have your entire business model being copied by someone else. So if you go to a Marriott hotel in India, or you go to a Marriott hotel in Budapest, or you go to a Marriott hotel in any other part of the world, you will see that the model, the services, a lot of the various elements of operations that you will see is cut and paste. So you have your licensing and your franchising. Both are popular, and we'll see some of the merits and demerits. Continuing with discussion on exports. Exports is nothing but products and services going out of the country. So here, looking at some of the global participants when it comes to goods and services, and as a percentage of your GDP. Later on, I'll be talking about some of the smaller countries like Slovak Republic and Ireland, etc., where the percentage of trade, both imports, exports, international trade put together as a percentage of GDP is in hundreds of multiples. Right now, we are simply talking exports of goods and services as a percentage of GDP. As you can see, the trend over the last 4 years, and of course in the pandemic years, we have seen a downside in almost all countries to a certain extent. India managed to stay flat, but you see that India's percentage of GDP for 2022 was almost 23%. Some of the other countries like Netherlands, etc., have a higher percentage when it comes to exports as a percentage of GDP. So this gives you an interesting idea in terms of how much focus or how much achievement these economies have made as far as export orientation is concerned. Licensing, I already told you, giving you the example of Coca-Cola's brand being used globally, or a Nescafe being used by a Starbucks. Here in licensing, another thing to mention is that you don't really have capital investment, because you're pretty much using the logo or the brand. You don't really have an operations model which is coming in. Of course, there are other elements in terms of brand reputation should be maintained, all of those things which have to be kept in mind. But it is simpler when it comes versus franchising. Some of the demerits of licensing are, of course, your quality control, which could affect your brand, technology theft. These are some of the elements which could negatively impact operations. In franchising, as I had told you, when it comes to a player like Marriott, so you allow another entity to do business in your name, but you also give them the entire business model on which to operate. So it is a standardization and consistency in terms of the business model and format which is being adopted across. Now you will get your royalty, you will get your commercial benefits out of fees, etc., out of the receipts of your franchising agreement. Likewise, the way you get your revenue considerations from licensing. When we talk about foreign direct investment, and especially when we'll be talking about it in terms of FDI which came into India post liberalization, then we will go into a lot more detail. But it is flow of capital from one country to another, and this is flow of capital, not just capital, but this is capital which also comes in with technical know-how, with skills, with some sort of ownership stake. It is not simply sleeping partnership. It is actually a controlling ownership stake where there is involvement, where there is technological know-how, where there is knowledge, where there is management which is coming into play along with the capital flow which is coming in. So, for example, if a country insurance company internationally is investing, is bringing an FDI into an insurance partner in India, then it is not simply them saying we are taking so much stake in your company, but it is also we are going to be involved in the formulation of your insurance policies. We are going to be involved with discussions that you have with your government in terms of various aspects. We are also going to be involved in your premium setting, all of those things. So it is not just money flow, it is also money flow which is coming in with an ownership and management stake. Foreign direct investment can be in different formats. There is joint ventures where they showed shared ownership. It could be 50-50 or others. There are more than 1,000 Indian joint ventures abroad with across countries. It could be JV or it could be a wholly owned subsidiary. A wholly owned subsidiary would be 100% ownership where the subsidiary is operating for this international partner. So here, obviously your control in terms of management, skill, know-how, etc. Is going to be a lot higher. There are no minority shareholders. The parent company is located in another country, and you have a wholly owned subsidiary which is operating in a different country. For example, a wholly owned subsidiary in India of an international company, and there are no other shareholders, and the domestic subsidiary has to adhere to Indian laws, regulations, taxes, etc., all of those things. When I talk about one of the cases later on of the Vodafone Idea tax implication case which happened starting 2007, then we'll see how subsidiaries get impacted by international different regulatory environments across the world. Now, simply talking about how global and international things are, now something as small as a cricket ball which is used in the West Indies or in England is being produced by a company sitting in India. You had a few years ago, to give you something which was very big in the social media, there was a celebrity who went to that Big Boss show in the UK, and she became very popular, and she launched a perfume chain. And the perfume was pretty much not available in India. It was pretty much available only in Britain and other parts of Europe possibly. But the bottle for those perfumes was actually being produced in India. So can you imagine how international business comes into play, and the various elements across the supply chain, across the various stages of production can come into play here. And even though in India no one knew about that perfume brand, in India that lady was not even popular, but we were a huge supplier in terms of the bottling plant being present in India and supplying the bottles for those perfumes. So international business is something not just big airplanes, iron, petroleum, etc. It is also something as small as a cricket ball and a perfume bottle that impacts our life. Thank you.